Are you enjoying this podcast? Well, you have KUOW members to thank for that. KUOW members make the trusted local journalism and storytelling you hear on this show possible. Become a member today and help support the production of this podcast. It only takes a minute. Make a donation at KUOW.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
You're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Public records belong to the people. That was the argument made in 1972 that spurred a citizens' initiative into law, creating Washington's Public Records Act. That act is still considered one of the strongest public records laws in the country. It opened virtually every government document to the public, allowing anyone to request information about the work that government employees are doing. That's important, yes, to journalists like me, but also to the public at large. It means no hiding for lawmakers, no closed-door meetings or secret deals. At least it's supposed to. Over the last half century, watchdogs argue that the Public Records Act has lost some teeth. When it was passed in 72, there were only 10 exemptions for when records wouldn't be made publicly available, mainly related to privacy. As of last year, there are more than 650 exemption rules now for public records requests, and the legislature itself has actively worked to circumvent requests. For decades, it considered itself exempt until a 2019 ruling by the state Supreme Court said lawmakers in Olympia are very much subject to Washington's public disclosure law. Even so, according to a report recently released by the Washington Coalition for Open Government, also known as WashCog, the state legislature has been increasingly chipping away at Washington's Public Records Act by adding dozens of new carve-outs in recent years. And that's not the only finding from the report. Mike Fancher is the former executive editor of the Seattle Times, and he's president of WashCog, and he joins me now. Hi, Mike. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi. Happy to be here.
So first off, what are the top-line findings of this WashCog report?
Well, the overarching finding is that the people's right to know is eroding in Washington state and that this trend must be reversed. That's the overall finding.
And can you just give folks an example? If they are not journalists or if they're not people who file Public Records Act requests for various other reasons besides journalism, what kinds of information are we talking about here is being exempt under these carve-outs?
Oh, it's all over the map. It can have to do with commercial interests or confidential interests in terms of personal privacy. There's just no end to it. And what tends to happen is that a constituency comes to the legislature, makes a case that there is a problem or the potential for a problem having to do with the disclosure of records. And then the legislature seems very sympathetic to that and discusses creating an exemption. And what tends to happen is, with good intentions, the exemption is pretty broad and over time has unintended consequences.
Okay, now this can get confusing. Can you clarify the ways that the legislature has worked in opposition to the Public Records Act? There have been multiple claims that the law doesn't apply to legislators, including ongoing cases of them using legislative privilege. And to be clear, that's on top of their work passing exemptions?
Well, these exemptions are passed by the legislature, and they can apply to all kinds of records and governments at all levels. So the exemptions are generally a broad range of issues. But specific to the legislature, the Supreme Court did rule that the legislators are subject to the Public Records Act. And then the legislature passed a bill that would have exempted them. There was a huge public outcry. More than 20,000 residents of Washington wrote or called the governor's office calling on him to veto the legislation. 13 newspapers in the state had front page editorials all on the same day calling on the governor to veto it. And even the legislative leadership was asking the governor to veto it at that point, which he did. But now, you mentioned legislative privilege. More recently, legislators in Washington state and some other states have begun to assert that the state constitution allows them a personal privilege under the speech and debate clause to exempt certain kinds of communications and records. We think that's wrong. We don't think that the constitutional speech and debate clause was intended to speak to records. So we sued the legislature. We lost in the first round, but we will continue to pursue this up to the state Supreme Court. We're confident that we will win in the end.
Mike, can I ask, why are you confident that you'll win here? Last November, a Thurston County judge ruled in favor of Washington lawmakers, saying that they have the right to withhold certain records using legislative privilege. The attorney for those legislators, Jeffrey Evan, who represented the state, argued that the state constitution's speech and debate clause grants lawmakers the right to withhold information that reveals internal and non-public legislative deliberation. How do you respond to the legal arguments by the state?
Well, I think we would argue that speech and debate doesn't extend to records, for one thing. And we think that absent some substantial work to define this privilege, we really don't know what it means. We also have asked the individual legislators to take a pledge that even if the court finds that there is a privilege, that they won't exercise it. Governor Inslee declared several years ago that he would not exercise the executive privilege that attaches to the governor's office, and he hasn't. So we like to see individual legislators and candidates for the legislature declare that they won't exercise the privilege should it be found to be legal. Now, I will say that so far, there have been, I think, 7 legislators who have agreed to sign the pledge. But I think they're all kind of waiting to see what the court says, and that may change once we have a ruling.
Yeah, keeping their options open, it sounds like. I want to bring into the conversation Candace Bach, who's Director of Government Relations at the Association of Washington Cities, which represents Washington cities and towns before the state legislature, the state's executive branch, and regulatory agencies. Hi, Candace. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to touch on an example of how public records come into play in city government and how they can be mismanaged. It's an example that's likely well remembered by Seattle listeners, those pesky text messages that went missing from Mayor Jenny Durkan's phone. During the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020, thousands of texts sent by Durkan, as well as former police chief Carmen Best, were deleted. A King County investigation found that the mayor's phone had its settings changed to delete messages after 30 days. Chief Best said that she deleted text messages, assuming that the city backed them up automatically as they do email. Now, the city was sued for the loss of these records, but neither official was sanctioned. What do you say to people who see this and really feel like government is getting more opaque and that there are few consequences?
You know, certainly there are those kind of situations that come up and they're high profile and they attract a lot of attention. There's been a lot of focus on more training, and we supported, along with the coalition a few years back, required training for elected officials as well as public records officers. And there's a lot more awareness, I think, today about their obligation to retain records. And it doesn't matter if it's a text message or if it's something you've written down. If it's a business-related record, then you've got to retain it. So I think we've really managed to raise the awareness and understanding of city officials. Again, some of these high-profile cases help with that education process, but it's complicated, though. The local government retention schedule is 200 pages long.
What's a retention schedule?
That is the guide produced at the state level by the state archivist that tells you how long you've got to keep a certain record before it can be disposed of. And sometimes there's no retention value, so you can immediately throw away that sticky note. Some are forever, things that you've got to keep for 100 years, 75 years, 6 years, 3 years, 25 years after the employee leaves service. So it is complicated, and it's even more complicated by the fact that these records come in all different shapes and sizes. And is it a text message or is it a data query from a spreadsheet? So there's a lot to it, and you know, keeping people up to date on what they need to keep and how long they need to keep it, it's a big job.
Mike, I want to bring you back in to the conversation. Mike Fancher, who's the president of Washington Coalition for Open Government, as well as the former executive editor of the Seattle Times. We heard Candace mention the issue of training. I also brought up this issue of accountability, and that's something that you have highlighted in WashCog's recent report. Talk to me about your reflections so far on the conversation. I mean, where do these improvements need to happen when it comes to training, for example?
Well, before we go to training, let's back up and look at the overarching conclusion of the report. So we say the people's right to know is eroding. Agencies fail to properly maintain organize and disclose records. And it's the organized piece that we think is a problem. We have all kinds of new technologies to help with organization, but to some extent, those technologies are being used to make it harder to find records if they're on emails, private email servers, or on communications devices that delete after a certain period of time. So we want to work with people like the Association of Washington Cities to help them get the support, the funding that they need to perform what is a basic function of government. Transparency should be perceived as essential to government as safe streets and good schools and a clean environment. But I don't think we tend to think of it that way. We see of it as more of a burden that gets in the way of doing the job. So we'd like to change that paradigm and really help the cities and counties and agencies get the necessary funding, have the training that they need. There is training, but we think it could be a lot better. We would love to see the state develop an information portal that local communities could plug into and use as a technology tool to help them with the retention and organization of records, and then possibly help in the resolution of disputes too, because nobody is well served when a request ends up going into a legal battle and there's a settlement. What tends to happen is the settlement ends up with the taxpayers footing the bill because somebody didn't do the job correctly or made a mistake, whatever it is. So those are all areas where we would love to be more helpful.
Candace Bach, the Director of Government Relations with the Association of Washington Cities, your response to that?
Yeah, I think we're always in favor of additional training and the idea of more funding. City resources are limited. There's lots of competing priorities out there. I think there is more funding going into records management. You know, we're getting new tools as technology advances. But I go back to there's so many different types of records, it's challenging, right? Cities are over 100 years old. They've got old paper records. Doesn't make sense, you know, to really invest in turning those into electronic documents in some cases. Small jurisdictions are the ones that I hear the most from. They're, you know, we've got 281 cities and towns in our state. More than half of them are less than 5,000 in population, and they usually just have a handful of staff. The city clerk is the Swiss Army knife in those communities, and they do a little bit of everything, including public records. The more we can support those folks in particular, the better. And I know, you know, Mike and I've talked about this previously. One of our big concerns is those occasional individuals who really tax our system by being the ones who make repeated requests or repeated litigation, more importantly. And that really is the part that sucks the resources out. And the taxpayers end up footing the bill, as Mike noted. They also really have an impact on those, particularly those small jurisdictions and their staff. It's a real impact on morale an increase in stress. And we're having a hard time keeping those positions filled. Anyhow, there's lots of turnover.
Mike, can I, sorry, Candace, I just want to have Mike's response to that, because that's something I hear a lot from municipalities and public officials, that we do have these sort of nuisance PRAs that sometimes can snarl a lot of resources with agencies. Mike, how do you balance, obviously, the need for transparency here, but also the fact that there are ways to sort of game the PRA system sometimes and really suck up a lot of time and resources in what many would say would be frivolous requests?
Well, one person's frivolous request is another person's urgent need. So that's the thing that we're concerned about, is the notion that there are vexatious requesters leads to attempts to close off access to records for everybody. And we think that's a bad proposition. We think that as long as the conversation is about who's the requester and why are they asking for this, what are they going to do with it, It's a losing proposition. The requesters aren't the problem ultimately. The system working properly is the problem. That's what we would like to address. Our report shows that 0.03% of requests end up in lawsuits. So let's figure out how to have a system that works so that the public gets the records that they're entitled to. Let's remember that. These records belong to the public, not to the government. let's fix the system so that it works properly. And then the vexatious requester issue, I think, goes away of its own weight.
I'll just jump in. I really appreciate what Mike said about fixing the system. The Public Records Act is really important, and it's got to be a living, breathing document. You know, it's got to keep up with the times too and what's going on. There's a lot more litigation out there than is reflected in the numbers that was provided, just because the JLARC report only collects data from those agencies that spend more than $100,000 on public records. So for 2022, it only reflected data from about 24% of cities, 68 cities out of 281. So it's really particularly missing data from small jurisdictions. So I think it's unfortunately more prevalent, and we see it as part of that protecting the effectiveness of the Public Records Act, the need to address, give some more tools. We don't want to cut off requesters. We don't want to make judgments about requesters' requests, but we want to give us more tools to handle disputes, as Mike said. We've long been trying to figure out with the coalition what would be an alternative dispute process that would be effective. And then we wanted to give the judge basically more tools, more discretion to kind of sort out what happens if this is really a vexatious litigation situation with a repeat litigator. So those are, you know, definitely some, I think, areas that it's important for us to talk about and bring stakeholders to the table and figure out ways to move forward that protect transparency and protect the act from abuse and make sure that there's access to records.
Candace, according to Crosscut, last year, the Association of Washington Cities was involved with legislation that would have set limits on when requesters can take a records denial to court. Can you talk to me about why the association was in favor of that and where that effort is now?
Yeah, thank you. You know, there was another bill this session. It had a hearing. It didn't go any further, but it's part of that effort to just find a way to make sure that the very few don't ruin it for everybody else and don't have an outsized impact on resources and clog up the system so that requesters can't get what they need in a timely manner. We were trying to create some alternative dispute resolution process that could maybe help resolve conflict before they needed to go to the court. And then trying to, again, give the judges more discretion to find out more about why was the litigation brought? What was it for? And allow the judge to take some of those things into consideration when deciding what kind of award or penalty that they would impose. So, you know, I know that it was not warmly received by the coalition, but we were trying to find a balance with protecting people's ability to make records requests, get those records in a timely fashion, and find a way to address those that use the act in a way that probably wasn't envisioned by those that authored it back in 1972. And it is an area that takes a lot of resources when those folks decide to make those kinds of requests in hopes of perhaps generating a lawsuit and getting a settlement.
Mike, not warmly received. Does that capture it?
I think that's fair to say, yes. We looked at that proposal, and we look forward to moving the conversation forward. But Candace says, we don't want the very few to ruin it for everyone else. And we felt that's exactly what focusing on the requester does, is that ultimately those kinds of solutions have a tendency to close out access to everybody else. So an alternative dispute resolution not only would discourage people from requesting records, we think, but also would put an extra burden on local governments trying to then handle the dispute process. So we don't think that that's the path to go on. I would go back again to say, how do we make this system work at the very start? How do we help communities maintain records, organize records, and make them easily available? Because that's what the law says. That's what the people of the state have said they expect from government. And let's start on trying to find those kinds of solutions. And especially, let's see if technology can help us achieve that.
Mike, just quickly before we go, final thoughts here on the future of these examples that you're giving, legislative privilege, passing the carve-outs in state law for the legislature, that appear to be chipping away at the Public Records Act's effectiveness in shining light on what's happening with our government here in Washington State. What's next here? What should people be watching for?
Well, next is we pursue the lawsuit and we try to avoid a situation where there's a declaration that legislators in Olympia have a privilege to withhold records. And then every other legislative body in the state is going to say, well, we're legislators too. And so we ought to have that same kind of privilege at city councils or county councils. So we want to try and stop that where we can. After that, I think our next effort, other than always being diligent and trying to monitor what's happening and bring things to light and push back when there is inappropriate withholding of information, is to move this conversation forward around training and public awareness. We're launching what we call the Your Right to Know Project, and we want to go around the state and talk to people. Nothing is more important to public openness and transparency than public activity, public engagement, the public caring about their right to know and exercising it.
Candace Bach with the Association of Washington Cities. Any final thoughts before we go? About a minute left.
You know, I just want to echo, I think Mike's right, that the public right to know is critical to city officials, and they really are working on engagement in many forms with their residents. And the Public Records Act is a powerful tool for that. So is the Open Public Meetings Act. So is just, you know, everyday residents being involved in their local government. And, you know, I think we share the same goals. We don't always agree on how to achieve them when it comes to the Public Records Act and, you know, where we need to make updates and changes to keep it relevant today. But I think the idea of open, transparent government is one that cities really strive to uphold with limited resources and a lot of other competing priorities. But I know it's really top of mind for city officials.
That's Candace Bach, Director of Government Relations at the Association of Washington Cities. And you also heard from Mike Fancher, former executive editor of the Seattle Times and president of WashCog. Thank you both very much for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. This show is only possible because listeners support us. If you're able to give right now, please check out the show notes for a link to donate. And don't forget, you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.